All right, let's go ahead and look at this together, Exodus 3 and 4. I know that I wasn't with you guys when we started this series, but the reason why we wanted to go through the book of Exodus during the summer months is because when you really think about what the story of Exodus is, it's the journey through the wilderness, right? Hence the name of the title, the journey through the wilderness. And we kind of divided up the series into two parts. So first of all, it's really about the journey that Moses goes through. And so the first couple chapters in the beginning, it's really about the story of Moses and how God uses him. But not only that, but ultimately it's about the journey that God's people go through. And so when we think about Exodus, at least for me, when I think about the book of Exodus, I think about, I think there was a movie that was recently released, right? So Batman became Moses, and he was able to part the Red Sea. And I didn't watch it because I didn't think it was going to be very biblical. So, I mean, maybe you guys can fill me in and say, you should watch it, Pastor Ben. But yeah, there was a movie. But before that, there was like Prince of Egypt. You guys remember that, DreamWorks? Right? They had whales swimming in the Red Sea. I don't know if you ever saw that part where Moses parts the water and in the Red Sea you see a humpback whale swimming. So, you know, whenever we think about the book of Moses, I mean, we think about not only the story of Moses, but the people of God wandering through the desert for 40 years and not being able to enter into the promised land because they sinned against God, right? So it's like story of missed opportunities and story of rebellion and so forth. But when you dig a little bit deeper, and when you think about this journey that God has his people go through, I think it's more than that. Because I think ultimately what that journey is for Moses as well as his people, it's really a journey of discovering who God is. It's this journey of discovering God's heart for his people. Because when you think about it, they've been in bondage in Egypt. And while they were in Egypt, that they were unable to worship God. So I'm sure they had an idea of who God was, but God was never someone who was personal. God was always a story that they would tell their children. And so it was this journey of rediscovering who God is and what he desired for his people. And I thought, man, this is so appropriate for us because I feel like this is the journey that God is bringing many of us through. Some of us, we might have grown up in the church and you might think, yes, I know who God is. But maybe you're more like the Israelites who have heard stories about who God is, who read, you know, who did lessons during Sunday school and so forth. And you might even think that, okay, I've experienced God through it, but maybe this is a journey that God is bringing you through so that you can deepen that understanding of not only who God is, but ultimately what he desires to do through your life. Maybe some of us, we don't know who this God is. And so it's that discovering for the first time, this God who's gracious and compassionate, this God who speaks his plans and his purposes in our lives. And so that's what we want to discover. We want to discover God's heart for us as a church. You know, one of the things that we've been throwing around, especially whenever we've been having our leaders meeting. I almost said meters leading. Leaders meetings. Is this whole idea of what is the heart of our church? Because if you can remember from this past year, we've been talking about how when we engage in ministry and do ministry, it's not necessarily about the what or the how, but it's really about the why, right? And so this question of the why is really exploring what is the heart and the DNA of our church. But when you think about the heart and the DNA of our church, it's not just as a church, this is our preference. Like when we worship, we like it dark. Therefore, that is the heart of the church. No, that's not it. But the heart of the church, when you really think about it, is the demands that Jesus makes upon his disciples. And that's why if you're part of our life group, the Bible study series that we're going through is what? What demands does Jesus make upon his disciples? Because the heart of the church is really discovering God's heart for his children. And when I think about this journey that the Israelites go through, I think it's really a journey of discovering God's heart for them. And I really hope and pray that as we go through this series, that it will really be this discovery of God's heart for our church. Because church isn't just an organization, but church is you and I, the people of God coming together to worship and to live out his purposes. Okay? So I really feel like this is going to be a very important series for us, not just in terms of just getting us ready for the fall, but really taking us on this journey where God will deepen our understanding of who he is. So with that in mind, let's go ahead and I'll start off. We're not going to read through the whole thing, but we're going to read through at least good chunks of chapter 3 and 4. So you guys remember from chapter 1, right? We know the famous story of Moses growing up, but then in the court of Pharaoh, he murders an Egyptian, flees for his life. And then here he is, 40 years later, he became a shepherd now, right? And so one day he's out leading the flock of his father-in-law, Jethro. He sees this bush, there's a fire that's coming out, but the bush doesn't seem like it's being consumed in that fire. So he's curious, he goes to see, and that's when God speaks. And so we're at verse 4. When the Lord saw that he turned aside to see, God called to him out of the bush, "Moses, Moses." And he said, "Here am I," or "Here I am." Then he said, "Do not come near. Take your sandals off your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground." And he said, "I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." And Moses hid his face, for he was afraid to look at God. Then the Lord said, "I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and have heard their cry because of their taskmasters. I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hevites, and the Jebusites. And now behold, this cry of the people of Israel have come to me, and I have also seen the oppression with which the Egyptians oppressed them. Come, I will send to Pharaoh, that you may bring my people, the children of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the children of Israel out of Egypt?" And he said, "But I will be with you, and this shall be a sign for you that I sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you shall serve God on this mountain." And then we see this dialogue between God and Moses. Moses is like, "I can't do it. What if they ask me who you are? What should I say?" And God says, "I am who I am, sent you," and so forth. And Moses is still like, "I don't think I can do it." And then we jump to chapter 4. And in front of Moses, God performs these miracles. He turns the staff into snake. Moses puts his hand in his cloak. It turns leprous. And then he puts his hand in his cloak. Again, he's healed. And then he pours this water from the Nile, and it turns into blood. And he's saying, "This is going to be my sign." And then we jump to chapter 4, verse 10. It says, "But Moses said to the Lord, 'Oh, my Lord, I am not eloquent, either in the past or since you have spoken to your servant, but I am slow of speech and of tongue.' Then the Lord said to him, 'Who has made man's mouth? Who makes him mute or deaf or seeing or blind? Is it not I, the Lord? Now therefore go, I will be with your mouth and teach you what you shall speak.' But he said, 'Oh, my Lord, please send someone else.' Then the anger of the Lord was kindled against Moses. And he said, 'Is there not Aaron, your brother, the Levite? I know that he can speak well. Behold, he is coming out to meet you. And when he sees you, he will be glad in his heart. You shall speak to him and put the words in his mouth, and I will be with your mouth and with his mouth, and will teach you both what to do. He shall speak for you to the people, and he shall be your mouth, and you shall be as God to him. And take in your hand the staff with which you shall do the signs.'" So Moses goes and tells his father-in-law that he has to go. And as he's going, he has this weird encounter, right? In 24, we continue. It says, "At a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. Then Zipporah took a flint," which is Moses' wife, "and cut off her son's foreskin and touched Moses' feet with it and said, 'Surely you are a bridegroom of death to me.' And he let him alone. It was then that she said, 'A bridegroom of blood,' because of the circumcision. The Lord said to Aaron, 'Go into the wilderness to meet Moses.' So he went and met him at the mountain of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord with which he had sent him to speak. and all the signs that he had commanded him to do. Then Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the people of Israel. Aaron spoke all the words that the Lord had spoken to Moses, and did the signs in the sight of the Lord, and the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the people of Israel, and that he had seen their affliction, they bowed their heads and worshipped. All right. Today, I don't have a PowerPoint. Because I don't want to just talk about, you know, like these are two or three things that we see in the midst of preparing this. I actually was going to do that PowerPoint until today. This morning, trying to finish everything off and spending some time just in my personal relationship with God. And I really felt like God was saying, you know, instead of sharing these observations, I want you to share what these verses mean for you personally. Because sometimes it's easy as pastors to share, okay, this is what the Word of God means, but doesn't necessarily impact, you know, that person's life. And so I wanted to share a little bit more personally, and as I began to really think about how these verses impact and speak to me, I feel like there's three specific things that God spoke into my heart. And so I don't know about you, but at least this is what I feel like is what God would speak to me through these verses, and I pray and hope that God will also encourage and challenge you through these verses about these three things, okay? So the first thing that God spoke to me, and by the way, I don't think any of these are going to be new revelations. Maybe it might be, but sometimes what we need, especially as we enter into different stages of our lives, are just reminders of who God is. And so I felt like really through the story that God was reminding me once again of who he is in my life. So three things I really feel like God spoke to me about through these two chapters. First of all, that I have to make God my singular pursuit in life. Right? When you think about what it means to be a Christ follower, it's more than just coming to church. It's more than doing a job as a pastor. But I have to make God the singular pursuit and my purpose in life. And I'll explain a little bit more of what that means. Second of all, I felt like what God was placing upon my heart is that it's going to be through this pursuit of who God is in my life that God will always be faithful in birthing his purposes and his plans for me. That it's through my personal pursuit of who God is, that it's going to be through that pursuit that I'm going to begin to discover his purposes and his plans that God has for me. And the last thing I felt like God was speaking to me about was that his plans and his purposes for me are not mine to dictate. But it's about humble obedience. That I need to humbly obey the plans and the purposes that God reveals into my life. And so I want to challenge all of us to really think about not only these three things, but how that impacts your life personally as well, right? So let's get into the verse a little bit. So God comes to Moses, tells him that God is going to use him to deliver, right, the people from captivity in Egypt. And so when you think about it, the backstory is Moses tried this already once before. I think it's in Acts, right? Acts 7, when Stephen tells the story of Moses. He beats up the Egyptian and he thinks that this is my chance, that this is the opportunity that God is giving into my hands, so that through this opportunity that I can lead my people out of bondage. And so he tries to rush ahead of God, tries to rely on his own wisdom and strength, but every time you try to rush ahead of God, no matter how good of an idea it might seem, you know that it's always going to end in disaster. That every time you try to rely on your own strength and your wisdom, it's never going to work out. So he flees to Egypt. So here it is, 40 years, tending sheep. I mean, think about going from the splendor of Egypt to literally the nothingness of Midian. Right? You're coming from a palace to a desert where you have all the power and authority to literally you have power and authority over sheep. And that's not even your sheep. It's your father-in-law's sheep. Right? So you go from the riches of this world to literally having nothing. And so you think about Moses in his 40s. I'm 40. And I'm thinking, this is the prime of my life. But God passes over him. And it's not until 80 that Moses is in his 80s when God finally says, okay, now you're ready to be used by me. So here he is, not only an old man, but really a broken man. And so one thing that we see is this persistence of God's calling upon Moses. And so he comes and he desires to restore this calling. And so you think about what that calling is, because oftentimes we associate that calling with, okay, this is what God is calling Moses to do. That he wants to use Moses to free his people. But when you think about how the story unfolds here, before that calling of using Moses to free his people comes what? Verse 6, when God reveals himself to Moses, it says, and he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. And it's very significant when you think about how God reveals himself to Moses. Because it's not about, I am a God who's going to use you. It's not about, I'm a God who's going to do this through you. But he identifies himself as a God who is relational. In other words, what he's saying is, Moses, I'm here because I want you to pursue after me in this relational way. And so it's really about teaching Moses, not only here, but throughout his life. And we'll see this theme over and over again in the book of Exodus, that it's really about Moses' pursuit of who God is. And through all these acts, whether it's obedience to going to Egypt, whether it's getting angry at the people, going up to the mountain and fasting for 40 days and receiving the laws, all these things that Moses experiences, what God is doing through these experiences is to really give him this heart that says, it is about me and it is about your pursuit of who I am. And I was just thinking about not only our church, well, not only was I thinking about our church, but just even talking to some of our leaders and so forth and just praying through a little bit of where I feel like we are as a church. And I don't know, there seems to be like this spirit of, I don't know if it's a spirit or a climate of just this religiosity that's pervading our thoughts of even how we approach God. Because this religious thinking says, in order for me to come to God, here are the things that I need to do. And that's what God is wanting from me. And that's why it's so easy for me to try to measure myself up to others in terms of what they do versus what I don't do, or what I do versus what they don't do. And that's why it's easy for us to get into this mindset that as long as I don't have these positions and titles, I don't have to do those things. Like when I see our leaders, they have to go to prayer meeting, they have to go to life group. I mean, of course, that's what they need to do because they're leaders. That's their responsibility. But I don't really need to do that because that's not what God is expecting from me. Or maybe the better phrase is, that's not what I'm expecting from God in this relationship. And when you think about how does that thinking come about in our minds and how does that, you know, trickle down into our hearts? Well, it comes ultimately from this thinking that somehow we have to earn our way to, not heaven, but earn our way in this relationship with God. So the more that we do, the better we are in terms of our standing before God. Or maybe it's that other extreme of, as long as I give God due diligence, right? As long as I pay my annual fee, every month we have an association where we live, so as long as we give association that money, I don't know how much it is. It's actually a lot, and they don't do very much. Then I'm okay. So as long as I come to church, then I'm okay. But when you think about it, I mean, what is that communicating in terms of what we are trying to pursue after in life? See, that's where you begin to dichotomize between, okay, this is my worship of God, and this is my relationship with Him, and then this is the rest of my life. So that here's the rest of my life, and then when church begins to encroach upon the rest of my life, that's when I get angry. Thinking that, how dare they? Telling me this is what I need to do. But is that the relationship that God is inviting us into? I mean, is that the relationship that God is inviting Moses into? Is that the relationship that God has invited me into when He came and He saved me? No, the relationship that God invites us into is this lifelong pursuit of who God is. And so if you think about that, if that is our singular goal, and that's what we desire to experience, then it shouldn't really matter, right? Whether we feel like, oh man, I have to do this because this is what the church is expecting. Because it shouldn't be about the expectation of an organization. It should really be about the heart of the God that you worship and serve. And I know that some of us, I mean, this is basic. But it's easy for us to forget. And I feel like God reminds us over and over and over again that it's not just about our religious responsibility. But it's about this pursuit in our relationship of who God is. And that has to birth the calling, right? So when you think about it, the order is God calls Moses into this relationship, and through that revelation of who God is comes this calling to go and to let my people go, to confront Pharaoh, and to become an instrument that God will use to work His miracles. So often what happens is that we bypass that relational aspect and we jump right into, okay, this is what I feel like God is calling me to do. And so we work very hard at it, but what happens? We quickly get burnt out. And that's why we find people saying things like, you know what, I'm going to take a break from church for a while. It's been a hard semester. I've given a lot. Maybe I need some time to recharge. But think about what that person is really saying and wanting and desiring. But God says, no, that's actually the easy way out for many of us. To relate to God in that way of the things that we do. But God says, no, you don't get to take that easy way out. Because what I want to do is I want to come and I want to enter into your heart and I want to work. And so it's really about not necessarily God using Moses, but the journey that Moses goes through so that he becomes more like who God is. And for many of us, even for myself at times, it's easy to relate to God through the things that we do and don't do, right? Because we have control when it comes to those things. We can say yes or we can say no. But when it comes to relating to God in that relational way, that's hard because then God begins to seep into our hearts and He says, I'm going to probe into the deepest crevice of your life. And I don't just want 4 hours, but I want 24 hours. 7 days a week. In other words, I want every aspect of who you are. And when you think about it, that's a lot harder because it no longer is this Christian life where things are, okay, this is what I do and this is how that thing that I do defines me. But it really becomes a life where you literally have to surrender it all. And I think ultimately that's the invitation that God brings into Moses' life, to surrender it all. And that's why if you see throughout the story, Moses keeps on bringing excuses, right? But God, I can't do this. I can't speak that way. Sure, maybe 40 years ago, but not now. And God cuts through all these excuses. Because what he wants to deal with is really Moses' heart. It's not like God doesn't know what Moses can and cannot do. Right? It's not like God says, oh, you know what? That's really good. I forgot that you stutter a little bit. Or I forgot it's been 40 years since you've actually interacted with the Egyptians. And gosh, you know what? Forget it, Moses. Maybe I'll go find someone else. Because it's not really about what Moses is able to do, but it's about what God desires to do in Moses and in his people. And what is that? Because the book of Exodus is really about the story of freedom that God wants to bring into the life of his people. I mean, literally, freedom from being slavery in Egypt, and figuratively speaking, freedom in their relationship with God. And I feel like that's the big challenge for many of us. That God is wanting us to experience freedom in how we relate to who God is. And we see the faithfulness of God, that he comes to Moses over and over and over again. And he's faithful in not only revealing who he is, because it's through this conversation that Moses begins to learn that God is a God of compassion, that he hasn't forgotten about his people, that God is a God of power, that he is truly able to do what he spoke into my heart about. And so it's really this journey of pursuing after the heart of God and, you know, knowing who he is. And it's through this journey that we see over and over again God desiring to breathe life into his people. And ultimately, I mean, that's what we want to experience, right? I mean, hopefully that's what we want to experience. But how do we experience that life? It's as God begins to remove the shackles. And I know what I'm saying, it might sound, yeah, God removing the shackles. But, I mean, think about it. Think about what that would mean for you. You know, recently during our global staff meeting, I mentioned this to the leaders because I was really excited about this news. Some of our GA students from Ann Arbor, so GA I think is Global Access. It's the international ministry. A lot of them are actually from China. You know, God has really been opening that door, especially in our Ann Arbor church, to reach out to a lot of Chinese international students. And so during the summer, they went back home. A lot of them are from a certain city. I'm not going to name what that city is. Who knows who could be listening to what, right? So anyhow, so they're all back in that place. And they decided, hey, since we're all here, why don't we meet together? So that we can continue to fellowship, we can continue to encourage one another. And so they started doing that, and they said, well, since we're meeting anyhow, why don't we just form a life group? And so they actually formed a life group together. They came up with a name. I forgot the name of the name. Sorry. But they emailed it to all the pastors. I'm like, wow, this is awesome. And the thing that really got me excited, right, was not the fact that they started meeting together, and it wasn't the leaders telling them, okay, this is the expectation and this is what you need to do. But they began to meet together, and in the process of meeting, guess what they were doing? Or they are doing now. They're reaching out. And so every time they gather together for this informal life group, there's pre-Christians that they're inviting into their midst. And so they're studying the Bible together, and they're letting them know who Jesus is. And recently they emailed us saying that they want to be part of the Ignite conference. And even though they can't fly back and, you know, go back, it's a little bit expensive, I guess, China, U.S., but they said, can we at least stream in? Because not only for us, but even for our pre-Christian friends, we feel like this is such an awesome opportunity for them to really experience who God is. And man, when I heard that news, I was like, man, I want to buy a plane ticket and I want to go there right now. I'm not going to do that, of course. I mean, I can't. Maybe I can, unless Pastor Tufu comes back every Sunday. Maybe I can do that. But I mean, why did I feel that in my heart? I felt that in my heart because that's what every single one of us, that's what we're longing for. Because that testimony is not just, hey, here's the cool thing that our brothers and sisters are doing in, forget it, Shanghai, at the university they're meeting together, right? I mean, when you listen to what's going on, I mean, that's God breathing life into his people. And in that life, there's excitement, there's joy. There's this genuine desire to worship God and to make his name known. And when I hear that, it's a natural inclination within me to say, I want to be part of that. Why? Because all of us, we were designed for that, to experience life. But the only way I feel like where we are as a church that we will experience life is if we experience freedom from this religious approach in our relationship with God. And just like the invitation that God gives to Moses to say, hey, I'm the God of your father. I'm the God who faithfully walked with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. I'm the God who spoke promises into their hearts. I'm the God who sustained them through and through. I'm the God who gave them hope. And he's inviting Moses to tap into that heart. Because this is what I want for you. And I feel like that is God's desire for all of us, that that's what he wants. It's not somehow measuring ourselves against others. I mean, if you want to measure yourself against someone, measure not to myself or to the leaders. Measure yourself to Jesus, all right? And think about, okay, Jesus died for my sins and rose again. How can I up him one more? How can I do better? You can't. So I was being a little bit sarcastic when I was saying measure yourself against Jesus. You should, because we need to be more like Jesus. But man, don't strive for something greater. And I just feel like God is saying it has to be this journey where you are pursuing after my heart. And as you tap into my heart, and as you are able to experience life, as you are able to experience freedom and grace and mercy, that's when my purposes will come. That's when you're going to be saying, God, use me. This is what happens when I do this. All right, let's go to the third one. Let me just end with this, all right? So the three things, at least I wrote them down, so, all right, God has to be that singular pursuit in my life. My pursuit of God will always birth his purposes and his plans for me, and his plans and his purposes for me are not mine to dictate, but humbly obey. Because ultimately, that's the lesson that God brings into Moses' life over and over again. That his purposes for us is never about us dictating how we're going to do certain things for God. But it's about God molding and shaping our lives so that we actually become the vessels that he will use to accomplish his purpose for us. I think when everything is said and done, I think the only question that's really going to matter is really the question of how were we able to relate to God, right? It's not a question of what you did. It's not a question of how big your 401k or whatever B, C, D was. It's not a question of how well you did at school. But I think it's really going to be this question of how faithfully were you pursuing me? And how humbly were you living in obedience? And so one by one, we see God who is able to remove the obstacles from Moses' life. And I feel like it's going to be this journey where God is going to begin to remove those obstacles from our lives as well. And so I think when God says, okay, you're going to have to do this, but you're going to have to do this my way, I think it's actually God breathing freedom into Moses' life. Where God is saying, Moses, you don't have to be God. You don't have to know everything. You don't have to be in control. You don't have to worry. All you have to do is trust. And all you have to do is obey. It might not be the easiest. It might not be the most pleasant. But as you step out to obey and trust, that's how my power is going to be released through your life. And what God desires in Moses, I think more than anything, is really this internal change. Because there's this weird, and let me end with this, right? In chapter 4, verse 24. It's just really weird. So Moses finally says, God, I can't do this, I can't do this, I can't do this. God comes and just reveals his power, glory, might. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. He says, fine, I'm going to go. And so here he is on his way, but then the word of God tells us at a lodging place on the way, the Lord met him and sought to put him to death. And so here he is faithfully obeying what God has commanded him to do, but the Spirit of God is coming to put him to death. Why? It's because he actually forgot to circumcise his sons. And so as the Spirit is coming to put him to death, his wife takes a flint, and she does the job. And then, because of that circumcision that takes place, the Spirit of God actually leaves him alone. And you're thinking, like, what? What? That's a weird story. I mean, what does this have anything to do with Moses going and actually becoming the instrument that God will use? Well, I would say this has everything to do with it. Because what this story tells us is that every aspect of Moses' life that God is going to keep him accountable. In other words, what God isn't interested in terms of Moses is how I'm going to use Moses, because ultimately God doesn't need Moses. But what God wants is Moses' obedience and faithfulness in all aspects of his life, including this aspect of obeying God when it comes to the area of circumcision. And what God is saying is that, Moses, I'm not going to overlook one single area of your life, because my ultimate aim and my purpose and my goal for you is to transform you so that you will now begin to reflect who I am to my people. And I think that really speaks to us a lot about God's heart. That God is interested in us, that God is desiring for us to become more and more like Him. And ultimately, that's what our pursuit has to end in. And the only way that we're going to be able to get there is through humble obedience. I mean, when you think about it, Moses doesn't have that choice of saying, oh, God, you know what? I forgot. But he has to obey, because it's really God's way or no way at all.